My name is Nadia Islam. I'm with the NYU Center for the Study of Asian American Health, and we are an NIH-funded health disparities, a National Research Center of Excellence. I'm not going to talk so much about our center, but I'd be happy to answer any questions that anyone has, and I just want to let everyone know that we have many new projects starting, which includes job opportunities at our center, and I know everyone's always interested in that, so please feel free to ask me any questions after the talk. So today I'm going to talk about one of our major research projects within the center, which is the DREAM Projects. It stands for Diabetes Research, Education, and Action Among Minorities. And specifically, I'm going to be talking about a mixed method study that we did concerning knowledge, attitudes, and perceptions about diabetes in the Bangladeshi community. These are my study co-authors that I'd like to acknowledge. And I'm going to start by giving you a brief overview of the project. So the DREAM Project, as I mentioned, is a five-year project to develop, implement, and test a community health worker intervention designed to improve diabetes control and management among the Bangladeshi population in New York City. This is a university community partnership. We do use community-based participatory research as a guiding framework for this study, and we have a coalition that guides all of our work and the implementation of this research. Our coalition members are listed here, and I just like to acknowledge them. You know, we could not do this study without their dedication and their work. So the specific aims of our study are to engage in partnership development, so to use the principles of CBPR to expand upon a partnership that actually already existed, targeting the South Asian and Bangladeshi community in New York City. And our second specific aim is to conduct a descriptive study to examine trends and risk factors and patient outcomes among Bangladeshi Americans diagnosed with diabetes in the New York City public hospital system. And then our third specific aim is really to develop and test the intervention. So what I'm going to talk about today is partially from our second aim and our third aim, we conducted a mixed method study to be able to inform the development of our intervention. So just some brief background. Bangladeshis are the third largest South Asian group in the United States, and the 2000 U.S. Census, there were about 50,000 Bangladeshis nationally. New York State is home to the largest Bangladeshi population, and New York City is home to the largest urban Bangladeshi population in the United States. I think what most often gets quoted about this population is the tremendous growth that it's experienced in the last 10 to 20 years. Between 1990 and 2000, for example, across the U.S., this population grew from between 250 to almost 400% in parts of the country. These are some brief statistics about Bangladeshis in New York City, and I'm not going to read over all of them, but to summarize, Bangladeshis are by and large foreign-born, about 85 to 90% of the population. The per capita income and household income tends to be lower in New York City among the Bangladeshi population than citywide rates, as well as compared to other Asian American groups. About a third live in poverty. Importantly, for health and healthcare access, the majority of Bangladeshis are limited English proficient, about 60%, 24%. No, sorry, 60%, 24% in New York City as a whole. And there is a larger average number of household occupants in the Bangladeshi population. So in terms of diabetes in the community, I think we know a lot now about diabetes in the South Asian population, that this is a big issue facing our population, and particularly among the Asian Indian population, for example. There have been several studies now documenting the high rates of diabetes, but there's actually no published studies on the Bangladeshi population in New York City, and this is despite growing evidence from the home country as well as among Bangladeshi immigrants in the UK and Canada that diabetes is a growing concern. Studies among Bangladeshi immigrants in the UK have documented that lack of knowledge surrounding issues of diabetes, lack of information, and lack of access to health professionals really affects the self-management of diabetes among this population. So, the DREAM Project is a community health worker intervention, and we are actually one of our community health workers is sitting in the back, Mamnoon Haq, and our project coordinator, Krithika Ghosh, is sitting right there. But we really wanted to ensure that we developed this intervention with input from our community partners, and more importantly, with input from the community. So we used a mixed methodology to try to really understand what the conceptions and knowledge of diabetes was in the population, and what the community thinks that they need to help them manage their own diabetes. So we conducted a qualitative and quantitative study. The qualitative component included 6 focus groups recruited about 48 individuals. And the recruitment occurred through newspaper advertisements in the leading Bangladeshi papers in New York City, community and street outreach that was conducted by our community health workers, word of mouth, as well as outreach within the community-based organizations that are part of our coalitions. Our target population was individuals with diabetes, as well as caregivers for people who have diabetes. So, for example, wives of husbands who may have diabetes, or mothers or fathers of folks who may have diabetes. Our community health workers actually facilitated all of our focus groups. They received an extensive training. They received a 2-hour training on focus group methodology, and then also conducted a series of mock focus groups to be able to hone their skills, and they were fabulous. And our focus groups were gender segregated, so with input from our community members as well as our CHWs, it was felt that some issues would be better discussed if the focus group participants were separated by male and female gender. So in addition to the focus groups, we also conducted a 72-item survey questionnaire with all of our focus group participants. And this was interview administered by volunteers as well as other interviewers in Bengali. So this just gives you a sense of the focus groups. We did a series of 6 throughout the boroughs in New York City where Bangladeshis are concentrated. And we did 2 focus groups specifically with Bangladeshi patients of Bellevue Hospital, which is one of our main partners in the study. Bellevue Hospital is the largest municipal hospital in New York City, which does see a large number of Bangladeshi patients. So for our data analysis, for the qualitative data, we developed codes. Our project team developed codes based on research domains and emergent themes, and I conducted the coding using Atlas TI. And for our quantitative data, we used SPSS, and I'm just going to present some univariate analysis today. So moving on to our results. This is just a brief overview of some of the demographic characteristics of the population. So on average, the mean age was about 48 participants, and we did have equal numbers of female and male participants across the focus groups. I think this slide is striking, especially when compared to our first presenter, that this was, by and large, a lower income population. So about 30% had an income of less than $25,000 per year. I also think this slide is quite striking. We did ask about English proficiency and found that about 91% of the participants in our focus group spoke English well, not well, or not at all. And similarly, in terms of reading and writing English proficiency, about 88% of our participants reported not reading or writing well, not well, or not at all. So what I've done is kind of mixed in the quantitative and qualitative results based on various domains that we looked at. So I'm just going to go over these briefly. We started off all of the focus groups asking about what does good health mean to you or to your community. And actually, we were surprised by this, but happily surprised that the majority of participants really agreed that good health includes being both physically and emotionally well. So I'm not going to read all of these. I think I'll just read the first quote. One of our female respondents in Queens said that good health means you're not just sitting in one place all the time. If you're working, you have less stress. That in itself is a sort of exercise. If you're sitting all the time, your blood doesn't circulate properly. You won't feel good if you're sitting all the time. If you are with 5 people outside being active, you will feel better than if you're just sitting alone. You will get more from it. So you can see this sort of combines being physically active, having social support, and having, you know, being free from mental stress. In terms of self-rated health status among our participants, we did find that the majority of participants did report fair or poor health, which is, you know, a good indicator of overall morbidity. We also asked about barriers to healthcare, including access to health insurance and other barriers that might be experienced. We thought that it was positive that about 30% of our participants did report that they did not face barriers accessing healthcare, but the more common barriers were language issues, work hours, lack of information on where to access healthcare, and of course, affordability issues. In terms of insurance status, about 22% of the participants that we targeted in the focus groups were uninsured. The majority of participants that were insured through government-sponsored programs. In terms of usual source of care, about a little less than 40% did go to a private doctor. I think very importantly, especially in regards to diabetes, about a third of our participants reported going to the emergency room as their usual source of care, which really is going to affect their continuity of care, especially with a chronic disease that requires a lot of self-management. And about 17% reported going to a hospital, public hospital or private hospital, for their care. So in terms of diabetes knowledge, we really found that it varied. For example, this first quote, the woman was speaking about diabetes and was able to say the name of diabetes in Bangla and the sort of official medical term for diabetes, and really had a lot of knowledge, but it really varied across the board, so there were participants with much less knowledge. Participants also had a sense that diabetes were related to other diseases. High blood pressure, cholesterol were the ones that came up the most. And a few of our participants did acknowledge that diabetes has some long-term consequences in terms of vision, legs, circulation, etc. So as you can see, the majority of our participants were diabetic, about 62% participants in our focus groups were diabetic, and this is not surprising because we recruited diabetics into the focus group. We have another general needs assessment survey that we're doing in the Bangladeshi and have found that about 28% of Bangladeshis in New York City are diagnosed with diabetes. In terms of managing life with diabetes, we found various things. One is that knowledge of hemoglobin A1C, which is a prime indicator of diabetes, was very low among participants. The majority of participants, despite being diabetic, did not know what hemoglobin A1C was. Some of them had a vague idea that they had heard it before, but that was about it. On the other end of the spectrum, in terms of self-management, we found that self-management practices were quite good. Many participants reported good medication adherence. And I want to read this last quote because I thought it was very interesting. This came up several times for our focus groups. Many participants said that, you know, after being diagnosed with diabetes, they had this sense of, you know, it's very important to follow a routine, and that having diabetes actually kind of made that positive change in their life. So this gentleman says that diabetes put me into a niyom, which means sort of regular routine in Bangla. That means eating habits, moving around, walking, exercise, taking care of myself. It means it puts you in a wide range of regularities. And he says a lot more stuff that I'll let you read, but this was something that came up several times. As I mentioned, you know, we also asked in the survey, do you know what hemoglobin A1C is? And a very small percentage actually knew what that was. We also asked about causes of diabetes. You know, this really dovetails well with Amr's presentation. Stress was something that came up again and again as a source of diabetes. Hereditary and genetics and this idea of family lineage was also something that came up quite a bit in terms of diabetes. And I'd say the number one thing that came up was this concept of onium, which is the idea of not following a routine or not being regular in your life. And so folks said that they, you know, we eat and then we go to sleep, and that's onium, you know, that's not following a routine. So those are really the causes of diabetes. In terms of how do we control diabetes, participants, you know, had a general sense of eating healthy foods, engaging in physical activity, and going to the doctor regularly were important. Participants also mentioned some traditional Bengali foods that they thought were good for diabetes control and prevention. Bitter melon was one thing that was mentioned. Methi, which is a type of spice, right, is another thing that was mentioned. And the role of food was really highlighted as a sort of a central area of concern in the cause of diabetes and also in the management of diabetes. You know, people talked about unhealthy foods as causing diabetes. And very interestingly, many of our participants talked about food availability in the U.S., sort of like food abundance in the U.S. as being a cause of diabetes, especially among women. They said, you know, in Bangladesh, it was harder for us to just go out to the market and buy things and cook all these rich foods. But here, there's delis all over the place. There's markets right down the street, so it's very easy for us. This is an overview of some food-related behaviors. As you can see, some things were pretty positive. You know, a majority of our participants reported reading labels and eating fruits instead of desserts, but almost none of our participants, you know, baked foods instead of frying them, for example. In terms of factors that impacted food choice, this was positive that about 60% of participants said that healthfulness was something that really motivated their food choices. But again, taste was the major next impacting choice. The amount of time is spent on physical activity. This is not surprising given what we know about this population, but about 30% reported not engaging in any kind of structured exercise per day. And the top reasons were lack of motivation and a lack of time. So in terms of what the community needs, we actually asked them, if you had an intervention, what would you want? And group educational sessions that really involved motivational techniques were highlighted. And then using the media was also really highlighted as important for this population. We also found this through our quantitative results. So the majority, you know, participants noted talking with health educators, using audio and videotapes, doing group sessions as their preferred methods. And then we actually asked them specifically about their willingness to participate in intervention components, which would include home visits and group educational sessions. And we did get a positive response. The majority of participants did want to participate in both of those aspects. So, sorry, I flew through this because I think I was running out of time. But what we did find is that, you know, awareness and knowledge of diabetes and diabetes management was varied among our populations. There were certain indicators that there was a lot of awareness, and then there were certain indicators where there was very low awareness. And we really found that motivation was something that a lot of individuals with diabetes were something that they needed help with. And this is where a community health worker intervention can really play a critical role, because community health workers are lay leaders from their own community who command a lot of respect and trust from community members. We saw food as a real central area of concern among our participants. And so I think, you know, to the extent that our intervention can really promote healthful and culturally specific foods, we're going to see success there. And we did, you know, I think the most important aspect of this study was to get a sense of, is the CHW intervention something community members are willing to participate in? And we did find, by and large, there was actually a lot of respect and appreciation from community members that there was this type of program and service available. And so, you know, we're happy, and we take that sort of as a go-ahead to move forward on our research project. And in fact, we are piloting our research intervention right now. We just hosted our first two orientation sessions and have received a really positive response so far. So that's all. This is my contact information, and I'll be happy to answer any questions later. Thank you.